Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Safety Conversation with SHP. My name is Mark Glover. I'm the editor at SHP, and welcome to today's podcast, which I'm pleased to say, excited to say, is going to take a bit more of a closer look into our colleagues at NEBOSH and looking into their three-year strategy, which was announced a couple of months ago and is set to cover the period 2024 to 2027. So to discuss the strategy and help us dive down into it in a few more details is someone who's obviously spent a lot of time working on this, and that's Andy Shenstone, who's the chief executive at NEBOSH. So he's had 23 years experience in education, training, and also consultancy. His early career was as a civil servant in the then HM Customs and Excise. In the following 16 years, Andy established and grew an education consulting practice, culminating in a role as group sales director at Capita PLC. So Andy took up the chief executive post at NEBOSH not so long ago, actually, about March last year, 2023. And immediately prior to joining NEBOSH, Andy was actually involved in the creation and development of Advance HE, an internationally active and member-focused UK registered charity dedicated to the development and enhancement of higher education. So after that introduction, I want to say good morning to Andy. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm very well, Mark, and absolutely delighted to be with you. Thanks very much.
So, yeah, Andy, you touched on a few parts of your career then. Obviously, what I've taken from it is you've obviously worked a lot within education. I'm quite intrigued. How did this experience help you going from higher education to ultimately the world of health and safety, essentially still in learning and qualifications? Was it a bit of a leap for you? Could you take what you'd gone before?
It certainly was a series of quite large steps. You might call it a leap. But sure. I think you've called out the important connection there, which is Advance HE, where I've come from well over a year ago now, a charitable organisation working to improve the quality of leadership, governance, management and teaching in higher education, and a charity working internationally with higher education, wherever it could be found,
sure,
in any country. And NEBOSH, of which I'm now chief executive, a UK-based but globally active awarding organisation focused, yes, upon safety, health and sustainability, but also, as I've said, a charitable organisation. So a lot of my experience has been around how you maintain quality in service provision, how you build effective partnerships, and how you operate successfully globally whilst protecting your values as an organisation. And NEBOSH is an organisation with such powerful and strong values. And when we speak to people about how they feel about NEBOSH, they feel so strongly about what we represent. Actually, the opportunity to develop what we're currently doing was so exciting. It's been a great opportunity. I'm delighted to be here.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, thank you. And we'll dive down into some of those values, I think, when we come on to the strategy part. And they're very, very obvious from the off. So looking forward to getting to stuck into those. But just wanted to ask as well, you alluded to it, you joined NEBOSH about over a year ago now, March 2023, I think. And I guess one of the first things on your probably mega to-do list was to start on the strategy. You've probably got experience of that. But was this a daunting task? Was it nice to get your hands stuck into something like that?
It was perfect timing, really. The organisation hadn't had a full strategy for some time. So one of my key priorities that I'd agreed with my chair and my board was that we needed to establish a new strategy for the forthcoming period. And that's what we've accomplished. We've launched it in April of this year. But you're right, it was timely. And doing that work over last summer and the autumn meant that I was able to go out and have very focused conversations with our key collaborators and partners, whether that's learning partners who deliver our awards or key collaborators, whether it's ROSPA, IOSH, IIRSM, and to name drop just a few of the organizations with whom we work very closely. And in having those conversations, not just to say, hi, I'm Andy, I'm the new CEO, but also, these are our emerging thoughts about our future priorities. How would you know, what's your feedback on that? How would that relate and support you and what you do? And then also engaging and bringing staff along with us. It was fantastic because it really made sure and focused my attention on really getting to understand the organisation as quickly as possible, but also really starting to think about where we would like to take the organisation with all the opportunities open to us.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, let's. I think it's probably about time we dive into some of those parts of the strategy. First of all, I'm sure all of our listeners know what NEBOSH do and the fundamental role they play for professionals in terms of learning qualifications. And you've introduced it very well and touched on it earlier on, Andy. But there was actually a stat I wanted to pull from the strategy document itself. Mm. And I think as a journalist, I'm always sort of looking at stats. They sort of jump out at me. And on one of the points highlighted was on the document itself that in 2022 to 2023, there were 63,601 learners from 159 countries which earned qualifications from NEBOSH, which is extraordinary. And it kind of brings me on to the strategy and one of the building blocks, because the strategy is made up of building blocks. And the one building block that I want to talk about, if that's okay, is the business and marketing development, and then drilling down to the goal, which is obviously for you guys to become the preferred global OSH qualification provider by 2027. It's a big task. The numbers are strong, but obviously that's more than a foundation, but there's still a fair bit to do there for you, I guess.
That's right. And I'll qualify that ambition. It's in our chosen market. So what we're clear about is that there are some parts of the world in which we're very active. We have an established reputation and established relationships, and we're already an awarding organization that people look to. What we want to do there is build and cement those relationships and grow them out. So 30% of our business is UK learners, 70% are overseas learners. You've noted there the number of countries from where our learners hail. Mm. And in particular, we're extremely active, for example, in India, in Pakistan, UAE, Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, to name just a few countries. Sure. Other than the UK. And yet what we do there is really quite modest. So what we're looking to do there is absolutely grow our provision in the way that we've outlined there and the manner that you've just quoted. But the critical foundation underpinning any narrative around growth is quality. We know that people choose NEBOSH because we're seen to be relevant, we're seen to be reliable, and it's globally recognised. And what we won't be doing, and just to sort of assure your listeners to this podcast, is what we're not pursuing here is sort of a narrative of growth at the expense of quality. It's quality first, second and third for us. But in doing so, we believe there's an opportunity to deliver more support to learners, aspirant OSH professionals in these countries. You know, if we take the example of India, it's the largest country by population as of last year. And it's a very dynamic economy. It's really trying to, for governments, really trying to focus on health and safety much more so than perhaps in previous periods. And so we really want to be supporting that dynamic so that we can help deliver our core goal, which is to protect more lives and get people home safe from work.
Sure. No, absolutely. Thanks. Yeah, ultimately, I think everything should be caveated, or that underlining of ultimately this is all going towards helping people and helping people stay safe, which is all of us in the profession are trying to do. And I just wanted to sort of mention the other six of those building blocks within the strategy. I'm going to cherry pick a couple, but the other ones I think are worth mentioning on top of the business and marketing development block, and they are assessment and quality, people and culture, learning partners, ethical practice, social purpose, and IT-enabled business transformation. And actually, I wanted to ask you about the latter around technology, and something that I'm sure you're having conversations about, we're all speaking about within the sector and the profession. And I wonder what you're seeing or hearing around artificial intelligence and AI. There's a big part of what your output and what you're trying to achieve. So how much of AI is this forming? Is AI part of the strategy?
Absolutely. And we have a very active group of colleagues who are tasked with very much looking at both the opportunities that AI represents to us as an awarding organization, but also, as you've alluded to, the threats as well. Mm. And, you know, it's also sort of getting past the hype. There is a lot of hype with AI.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And people get very excited about it. And what we need to do, like with any sort of organization, you know, take a measured approach, go, okay, well, what actually are the opportunities? What are the threats? So, you know, if you take the Microsoft suite of packages, just name dropping again, you know, trust, you can use AI as part of the core package these days, Copilot, and that's fine. And it's in a controlled environment. There are other AI packages out there that are in a much more open environment and represent and provide a different type of risk profile that you might not choose to engage with as an organization in our situation. So what we're doing, I think, and I know from speaking to other CEOs in common with a lot of other organizations, is first of all looking at the opportunities, as you might do as any generic organization, So from as simple as using AI to be a supporting tool to keep minutes of meetings, for example, which it can do. It does it after a fashion, and it's getting better. But beyond that, as an awarding organization, how can we use AI as a tool to assist? So it doesn't have primacy, as a tool to assist the work of colleagues in performing certain more technical functions. Human-centered, human agency is really at the heart of it. That's what our regulators require, and we absolutely respect that requirement entirely, but it's also what we would expect as an organization as well. The flip side, the threats, there are threats out there. There are unfortunately bad actors who would look to undermine the integrity of our awards. This is a problem all awarding organizations face. And the advent of AI does mean that some forms of assessment that perhaps previously were valid now become under threat. So we're very alert to that. We are always looking at alternative means of assessing learning and applied learning in particular, because our critical criteria is not just the validity of learning experience, but the applicability and the ability of that individual to take that learning safely into the workplace. So, yeah, it's a constant progression and a constant process, but very much at the forefront of our thinking.
I was speaking to someone the other day and talking about AI and around its adoption. And he got a phone call from someone saying, "Oh, I need to use AI." And the question was, "Well, what do you mean? How do you plan to use it?" And I think there's so many questions around this, around the implementation. I think you make a very, very good point about the hype, because once you strip that all back, with most things, you know, let's be strategic about it. It can be applied. It's technology, isn't it? Which is probably a whole nother podcast to do around adoption.
Absolutely. And very briefly, I mean, what our approach to this is, and what I've said to my colleagues is, what I want us to do is to approach how we think about AI with very clear intentionality, or a very clear intention within and within the context of our overall strategy. Mm-hmm. So rather than getting diverted by the shiny thing over there, it's like, okay, what's grounded? What's real? As you said, get rid of the hype. And let's just make some incremental changes and test it and pilot it, and then make sure it works before you move on, as you would do with any sort of deployment of new technology. So it's sort of like, removing the hype and just keeping it very simple and keeping it straightforward, actually. And what you find, therefore, is actually, and final point on this,
you've got
a really clear business case.
Absolutely.
You know, I could do this. Sorry, why? And why? How does that relate to what we're here to do? Show me the argument, as we would do with any investment of time or anything else. And that sometimes leads to great conversations. Sometimes it closes them down in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really good point. Hopefully we'll do another podcast in this, Andy. It'd be interesting to have a chat with you six, 12 months time to see where it's at.
We'll see
what's happening. But excellent. Thank you. And then a couple of other important building blocks within the strategy. Andy, well, I was quite taken with it. So obviously, an agenda on SHP on the magazine. We tried to focus on that social purpose and also ethical practice, which I say I think really important. Health and safety today, ESG, for example, it's playing a role in being weaved into a professional's day to day. And organisations like Nebosch have their part to play on this. So, firstly, on this building block of ethical practice, how are you planning to weave this into your own strategy at Nebosch?
It's a really fundamental part of who we are and what we do. And it's certainly something that preceded the current strategy. And it's very important that we maintained our focus upon it. And when we talk about ethical practice in this context, there are several elements to it. Critically, it's about maintaining the integrity of our awards. Because receiving a Nebosch certificate is, you know, rightly a consequence and a product of really hard study and hard labor by individual learners, we want to make sure that those individuals who do receive those qualifications, whether a certificate or a diploma or more specialized award, have performed in a way that meets the requirements. Now, unfortunately, when your awards are highly valued, it can tempt organizations and individuals to try and circumvent the process. And they get very inventive, Mark. They get incredibly inventive.
I'm sure.
It can feel like whack-a-mole at times. So what we're about there is maintaining that reputation for quality and ensuring that we have the processes and systems in place. So if there is an attempt at maladministration or attempt at malpractice, we are all over it. And it's a pattern that we encounter globally. So we take it very seriously. We have some quite sophisticated approaches, excellent colleague working area. But it is something, I'm afraid, that it will be a constant challenge. If you've got an award that people value, it gives them a gateway to employment or a pathway to a profession, then unfortunately bad actors will try and monetize that. And we have to manage that as best we can.
Sure, absolutely. You're right. That doesn't quite go away, does it? It's a constant keeping ahead. And then on to social purpose, Andy, which, you know, is a broad topic, but there was a bit in the in this part that was an acknowledgement towards inclusivity within the sector. It, again, something we're trying to push in on SHP, and I'm sure that the sector is more widely as well. In fact, I know it is more widely, but, you know, it's an obvious question. But why do you think it's so important to sort of encourage a diverse workforce?
When I joined the organisation, someone said to me, Andy, you're the typical OSH professional in the UK. I said, because I don't come from an OSH background. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you're white, you're male, and you're, you know, whatever age I am, mid-50s. Yeah. I went, oh, right, okay. And I looked into the data. And of course, we understand that people come to the OSH profession for a variety of earlier career paths. It's not always the case that people go to early career. Sometimes they come to a mid-career or as part of a career transition, and that necessarily has an influence over the composition. But I know, if you're too really drive and embed an effective culture that respects and embeds health and safety, and if you are therefore a change agent in that respect as an OSH professional, it's very challenging to be effective in that role if you cannot draw upon skills and capabilities that allow you to impact a diverse workforce. So I think diversity covers from a number of different perspectives. It's your ability as an OSH professional to be effective in a diverse environment. That's one aspect. But it's also drawing people into the profession from themselves a more diverse background who can then themselves be effective in those diverse environments. Mm-hmm. And I think just generally speaking, any profession that draws from a narrow cohort of the community of the professional workforce can itself find itself limited. And I think there's just an opportunity for us to ask ourselves some quite hard questions about how we support inclusivity in the OSH profession, what avenues and pathways we provide, how we can support that. It's something we do already. So we do it internationally through a range of mechanisms that we have in place and partnerships we have in place, for example, with L'Oreal on bursaries, but that's just to name but one. There are others that we do. And I'd really like to see us do much more of that. And we're giving some serious thought to how we might do that.
Yeah, it's a big question, isn't it? A big topic. There are so many nuances to it. And we'll see how it all plays out. There's a stat, another stat I'm going to pull out again on the strategy document. It comes from the ILO that 2.3 million people die a year because of work-related incidents. One of the roles of ultimately of this strategy is NEBOSH ultimately making a difference to sort of have an impact on that 2.3 million stat. Obviously, that's, do you bear that in mind? Is that a sort of a motivation for you guys in within this strategy?
It is possibly the motivation.
Sure.
Actually, when we were configuring and thinking about the strategy and taking out our ideas and developing them with staff, I mean, lots of ideas got staff engaged. But I have to say, when we started talking about our social purpose, that created another level of energy in the room, which was absolutely fantastic to see and really powered us forward. And in talking to other our partners as well, likewise. So I have done some work with colleagues just to remind ourselves that NEBOSH is a charity. It's always been a charity. I mean, we'll be 50 years young in towards the end of this decade, which is a fantastic journey and a fantastic story in and of itself. But there was more and is more that we can do to fulfill our charitable objectives. We do that through what we do day to day, and that's great. But in doing so also, we have been able to generate a significant surplus. So one of our obligations and commitments as charity, which I've made with my board, is that we will ring fence increasingly significant amounts of the free surplus such that we have to direct that towards our fulfilling our charitable objectives through a social purpose program. Right. And we're just building it. We're just designing it. We're starting the very early work on that, and it will no doubt evolve over time. But some of the early wins we hope to do this year is I don't say much about them until we've formally announced them, but to do some early work with some existing partners around existing initiatives that they've got that work, which might, they might be running out of money. There might be a multiply effect. We can put something on the table. They might be able to do an awful lot more than they're able to. But they've got models that work. But what we'll also be doing is working up some theories of change. So to help us understand, well, if we put money into X, what difference can we expect to make? A lot of that's going to be directed internationally, quite rightly, partly because 70% of our activity is international. But also, we know that the standards for occupational safety and health in developing parts of the world, if they exist at all, are problematic and quite often don't exist. Or if they do exist, they're not policed, they're not respected, they're not reflected in actual practice. And there are some particular industries or activities like artisanal mining, for example. I just picked that out as an example. You only have to look at the tragedy that represents in terms of the loss of life, both in terms of the activity is dangerous, but the poisoning that takes place because it's rare earths. And the irony is it's all about often contributing towards our global economy in terms of, you know, components of batteries and so-called renewable power sources. Yeah. Well, debate. And that's just one. There are many others. So I'm, as you go, get really excited by this.
Yeah,
there's a lot we can do. And I think, you know, it will be great to come back and talk to you, you know, in a year's time on this topic, because I think we'll have quite an exciting story to tell.
Absolutely. Yeah, good stuff. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end now, Andy, and just want to thank you again for coming onto the podcast and sort of being so candid with your answers as well and sharing your reflections so far. There's a question that I always ask. What inspires you to do what you do as chief exec at NEBOSH? What is it that makes you get up in the morning and come to work?
NEBOSH enjoys, and it's earned through the hard work of colleagues across the organisation, a really good reputation. And it has it's an organisation with terrific potential. So the opportunity that I have in the period for which I will be chief executive is to, in my mind and in the minds of colleagues through the strategy, is to basically nurture that and expand our reach and extend our impact by touching the lives of more people who want to engage in the profession, to give them more of an opportunity to make a difference in the workplace. So even at this stage, it's not even about necessarily fulfilling our potential as an organisation. It's actually starting just to realise what that might be and start the early work in that respect. It's a large, complex, difficult and challenging world. And we're a relatively small organisation. So we have to focus, and we will, to make a difference. But it provides some real opportunities for us. And as I've said earlier, you know, most, if not much, of this work will be done in collaboration with partners, some of whom I mentioned, others of whom we are yet to form relationships with. And that also is exciting, new partnerships, new relationships and new ventures, but with a real focus on equipping the workforce of the future to get home safe from work. I mean, that's really, really what the bottom line is.
Andy, again, thanks so much for coming on. We really do appreciate it. Just a bit of housekeeping. If people do want to find more about the strategy, we're going to put it below the notes here as well. But presumably people can go to the website as well. And it's pretty easy to find there, I'd imagine.
That's right. There's a page dedicated towards it. If memory serves, there's probably a talking head commentary from myself as well and other colleagues on different elements. So, I absolutely invite your readers to go and have a look at that. And that very much covers the ground that we've sort of touched on today in terms of those key elements. And it says a little bit more about each of those building blocks as well.
Yeah, that's great. And as I said, I'll make a note of these in the show notes below. So you'll be able to hopefully direct. We're about to direct you towards that as well and get a bit more information about what we just touched on today. Andy, thanks so much again. Hopefully get to see you soon. And best of luck in the strategy going forward.
Well, thank you for your time, Mark.
So yeah, unfortunately, that's the end of the show. I'm sure you'd agree, a really, really interesting one. Can't thank Andy enough for coming on, and do check out their strategy. As I said, I'll put below in the show notes. So if you are new to the Safety Conversation podcast, please do go back and check out our previous episodes. We've got a hub page of all of our episodes dating back to 3 or 4 years. If you do like what you hear, you can follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. We're also available on smart speakers. Simply ask to play the Safety Conversation. Finally, do stay tuned in to shponline.co.uk for all the latest health and safety news. You can also sign up for our bi-weekly e-newsletter. And most importantly, thanks so much for listening, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Take care.